Happy New Year. It's the first week of January, a good time to start some sort of a movement. Maybe you want to get something going in your family this year, something with people, or maybe it's just your life. You want to get some traction and get a movement going. I'm Robin. Welcome to East Lake, and hope you had a great Christmas. Happy New Year. What is it that you would like to see changed in 2015? What would you like to stop doing, or what would you like to continue to do? What would you like to begin to do? And here's a question. Will it require you to take a risk? It's the big idea this weekend. You can look in your notes. Jesus inspires us to take a risk. Following Jesus inspires us to take a risk. And the research is showing that the older we get, the less willing we are to take a risk. There's all sorts of reasons for that, but it kind of boils down to this. I have more to lose. I start to gravitate away from taking a risk because I have more to lose. I'm afraid of what I might lose if I take a risk. And maybe the question is, well, what's the big deal? I mean, you know, what's wrong with playing it safe? Well, here's the answer. Anytime that I make a decision based in fear, it always results in regret. You can just write that in the margin of your notes somewhere. Just any time that I make a decision, it's based in fear, it always results in some sort of a regret. And regrets, those are things that we live in right now. I mean, we might have made those decisions back in the past, but the regret portion, we live in those right now. You know, if I'm afraid I'm going to end up poor, I fear poverty, so I hang on to every nickel. I can never be generous. I have to watch all my money all the time, make sure I have enough money. Then at some point, I look back, and I might have my money, but I also have the regrets of all the different things that I missed, the different ways I could have used my money rather than just hang on to it so I'll never be poor. It's a regret, and you live in that right now. Right now you live in that. And some people are even afraid of God because they have something happen in their family or they had something happen at church. And so they see God as someone that's not happy with them, disappointed in them. They can never measure up. And they even like get afraid of God. And so they create distance and they move further and further away from God. Then at some point in their life, they sort of take stock of the distance and they like regret the decisions. It's like, I never meant to get this far away from God. And it all starts because at some point, I was afraid. So this year, as we get some traction going into 2015, the idea is, how does Jesus inspire us? How does he inspire us to take risks? So here's some practical things. We'll look at a few today. Write your notes, the first one. Don't let fear make the final decision. Now, there's different types of regrets. One type of regret is because of the things that I do. So I tell someone a lie, or I break a promise, or I hurt someone that I care about. I do something, and now I have a regret because of it. And the second thing, though, is the regrets that I have because of the things that I did not do. Fear got in the way, and there's something that I should have done, and I regret that I never did it. I didn't take the risk. I didn't take the step. I didn't say something. There's something that I did, and I regret that. And then there's the regrets that I have because there's something that I didn't do. Way back in the day, so like 1,000 years before Jesus, there's a man named Saul, and he's relatively unknown. He's Jewish, and God picks him to be the first king of Israel. They had no king, and God decides they're going to have a king. So he picks Saul. And the problem was is even though God said he was good enough to be king, the people didn't want him to be king. They didn't think he was good enough. And so I don't know if you've ever been through that, but you felt like you were good enough, and you even thought God thought you were good enough, but somebody else didn't think you were good enough. And so here's Saul. He starts to be insecure, and he's aware of what's going on. He catches on to it. It's like, these people don't think that I'm good enough to be the king, even though God says I am. Whose opinion matters more to you? Is there somebody in your life that their opinion trumps everybody's opinion? Whatever they think matters most. So here's Saul. God tells him, you're going to be the first king. And all the people say, we don't want him to be the king. He's not good enough to be the king. He's an unknown. He comes from some small little family. And God, he sort of captures this opportunity, sets everything up. Please know this, that when God decides that you're good enough for something, he'll always create some sort of opportunity so you won't have to prove yourself. That everybody will know, oh, I understand why. It's because God said so. So there's this nation of people called the Amalekites, and they're the rivals of Israel. You know, it's like BYU versus Utah times a zillion. You know, it's like, you know, and rivals and enemies. And God tells Saul, I'm going to give you this great victory. It's going to be a battle, and there's going to be this great victory. And because of this victory, everybody will know that I picked you to be the king. Everyone's going to know that I say you're good enough. But when Saul hears it, somehow it gets twisted. And when he hears it, what he hears is, this is my chance to prove myself. He hears this, I have to prove that I'm good enough. When's the last time you thought that? Or when is the last time you tried? When's the last time you thought, you know, you felt like, I have to prove myself. If they're ever going to think I'm good enough, I have to prove myself. And really what God's trying to do is solve all of that. He goes to Saul, he says, Saul, you don't have to prove yourself to anybody. Wouldn't that be refreshing just to be able to take that into 2015? I don't have to prove myself to anybody. God says I'm good enough. And he's trying to get the message across to Saul, regardless of your circumstances, regardless of you being an unknown, regardless if you're an underdog, no matter what's ever happened in your life, I say you're good enough. But Saul, he can just hear the people. We don't want him to be king. We don't like him. He doesn't come with the right past. So everything gets twisted. And they have this major battle, and Israel starts to win. And God had told him, he said, I'm going to give you the victory. Everybody's going to see that you're good enough because I say so. And here comes, and he gives him one condition. Saul, no looting. It's going to be a completely different type of victory. No looting. Don't take any of their stuff. Destroy everything. So the battle starts, and Israel starts to win, and Saul says, no looting. God said, no looting. Don't take anything. Don't steal anything. And the people, they say, who do you think you are? You're not good enough to tell us what to do. We want that stuff. We won this battle. That's our stuff. And here's Saul. He's sort of in the middle. He remembers what God said to do, but then the people say, we want that stuff. Give us that stuff. That belongs to us now. But he can hear the God side saying, don't do it. I told you what to do. Destroy everything. And he gives in. And he doesn't do it. And the people take all the stuff. And he has this this wonderful friend. His name is Samuel. He's a holy man. Everybody reveres him in Israel. He's the big man of God. And he's close friends with Saul. And when he hears what's happened, he comes up right after the battle. And in the Bible, it gives us a snapshot of their conversation. And look at it. It's in your notes. Then Saul admitted to Samuel, yes, I have sinned. I have disobeyed your instruction and the Lord's command, for I was afraid of the people. Circle that. I was afraid of the people and did what they demanded. But Samuel replied, I will not go back with you since you have rejected the Lord's command. He's rejected you as king. Saul let fear make the final decision and he lost the whole kingdom. Now, you might be thinking, come on, that's thousands of years ago, and I'm not a king, and she's not a queen. And like, how does this apply to me? And here's how it applies. That when I let fear make my final decision, I miss opportunities that God wants me to have. And the next thing you know, I'm listening to someone's voice that does not have my best interest in mind. And I fade further and further away from the one that does. Who have you been listening to in 2014? They don't have your best interest in mind. And it's caused you to fade further and further away and be afraid. And here's a straightforward question. What risk do you need to take in 2015? And yet you're afraid. What risk do you need to take? And maybe everybody in your life or somebody significant in your life is saying, you're not good enough to do that. But you know that it's a risk that God wants you to take. And he says you're good enough to take it. Now I want to contrast this with another guy in the Bible. He was a soldier of the next king of Israel. His name was David. Remember him? He's famous for killing the big giant with a sling and a rock. And he's got this one soldier. And listen to this soldier's resume. It's in your notes. But there was also Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, a valiant warder from Kabzeel. He did many heroic deeds, which included killing two champions of Moab. Another time, on a snowy day, he chased a lion down into a pit and killed it. Now catch this. We don't chase lions. We run from lions. But not this guy. He chases lions. He's a risk taker. It's completely different. He doesn't let fear make the final decision. And let me tell you something. When you chase a lion and jump down into a pit with it on a snowy day, it puts you into a position where you have to depend on God. And that's exactly where Saul was at. Should I listen to the people or should I listen to God? Should I listen to the people or should I listen to God? And had he listened to God, he would have had to depend on God. And you'll face a risk this year. There may be something in your mind already and go, man, that's the risk I need to take. But here's the thing. You'll have to depend on God. In fact, that's the whole point of the risk. Because if you take it, what lion do you need to chase this year? And if you do chase the lion, you'll find inside of you, your attitude starts to say, oh God, I'm chasing a lion, God. It'll cause you to start to depend on him. There's a story about a young acrobat in a circus, and he finally gets promoted to the flying trapeze team. And on the big night, he's standing on his little platform, and all he has to do is get the bar, and he has to swing out three times and let go, and his partner on the other side is going to throw a bar towards him. And on the third time, when he gets to the highest arc, he just lets go of the bar and grabs the other bar and swings safely to the other side. And the audience is all watching him. The lights are going. The drum roll's going. This is it. He's been waiting and waiting. This is his big moment. And he grabs the bar and he pushes off and he just swings way out there. And then he comes back. And this time he swings way out there again. And as he goes back this time, he looks over and his partner gives him the signal and he knows this is the time. And on the third time, he swings way out there. And he's at the highest arc and he sees the bar coming. And just at the moment to let go, he hesitates and he hangs on. And now he's going backwards. And he thinks, oh, I can still make it. I can still make it. And so he just like with all his might, like a little kid on a swing, he throws his body forward. But now the bar's further away. And now he just slowly goes back and forth. And pretty soon, he's just hanging from the bar. And all he can do is just drop into the safety net below. Don't let fear make your final decision this year. Don't do it. There's a lion you can chase. And you won't kill it all on your own. If you can depend on God. Now look at the second thing in your notes. Install guardrails for protection and set boundaries for protection. So here's the idea. You know, boundaries are the things that keep me on the road. So I want to say that because taking a risk is not a license for being stupid. I mean, you just can't just like take all different types of risks. In life, you have to have boundaries. They're like guardrails. They keep us on the road. They frame the risks that we take. I brought a couple of pictures of some guys that are glad that they had guardrails. Check this out. That guy. Here's another one. Guardrails. Yeah, here's the difference between a risk and being reckless. I have boundaries in my life. I've set up some boundaries that keep me in the game, so I don't do something stupid and call it a risk. Who can forget this scene from the movie? Check out this clip.
Oh, man, this is absolutely crazy. I mean, this is borderline reckless.
Don't you get it? You don't drive with your eyes. You drive with your heart.
This is just dumb. I can't see a thing.
You gotta feel the road. You gotta let it live inside you.
Are you feeling anything now?
I'm feeling a little bit.
Are you? What are you feeling? Tell me what you're feeling.
I'm feeling the worn wood of the steering wheel.
Yeah? What else?
A little bit of heat.
That's you and the car melded together.
Yeah, now I'm really feeling it. I feel like the car could drive itself.
I bet it could. Start her up.
Let's start this car up.
Yeah, boy. All right, so drive.
Taking a risk is not a license to be stupid. You got to have some boundaries. When I was in high school, my buddy had this girlfriend. She worked at a fast food restaurant, and she started giving him free food. So we all tagged along with long faces and sad faces because we didn't have any money, and pretty soon she started to give us food. She was willing to take the risk to please her boyfriend and his friends, and it wasn't long before the owner caught on, and she was fired. And she lost her job, and at some point she tarnished her reputation because she was willing to take a risk but really was very reckless. She didn't have any boundaries that said, what's right, what's wrong? What's the end game for you? You want to be a great husband? You want to be a good mom? You want your family to see you as reliable? What do you want to change this year? Be successful in your career? Maybe you want other people to just know from you that you follow Jesus. God knows you have some dreams. And Jesus has some dreams for you too. There's lots of things he knows that you want to see happen in your life, and he wants them to happen too. You matter in the big picture. You're a big part of his plans, and he cares about what goes on in your life. And many of the things that I want to see happen, it will require a risk this year. I will have to not allow fear to make my final decision, and yet I have to have boundaries. I have to have boundaries when it comes to time. How much time are you willing to risk this year? How much time should you risk? Boundaries when it comes to money. How much money are you willing to risk? How much money should you risk? Boundaries when it comes to people. Who should I listen to? Who should I stop listening to? Practical boundaries. Food, alcohol. What should I watch on TV? What should I watch on my computer? Those are boundaries, and they keep me in the game. This year, as you think about taking a risk, remember, set boundaries, because they'll protect you. And Jesus will help you do it. Now the third thing, jot in your notes, move forward regardless of fear. Jesus had the group with him, the disciples, and when he wanted to teach them about risk, he told them this story about three guys that worked at the same job. And they all had a chance for a promotion. Three guys work at the same job. They all have a chance for each of them have a chance to get promoted. And Jesus tells the story. He says there's a master, and he gives them all different amounts of gold. One guy gets 10 bags of gold, another gets 5 bags of gold, and one gets 1 bag of gold. And he gives them this gold, and the guy with 10, the worker with 10, goes out and takes this ginormous risk with the 10 bags of gold. And when he has his review, maybe you're going to get some reviews soon at work. When he has his reviews, he comes in and his boss says, how did it go? He goes, I risked 10 bags and I got 10 more bags for you. And the guy says, oh, you're promoted. And so then, it's time for the appointment. The guy with 5 comes in. He says, how did you do with your 5? He goes, I risked the whole thing. I put it and I have 5 more for you. His boss says, I have a spot for you. And then the guy with 1 bag comes in. He had 1 bag of gold. And Jesus emphasizes and sort of pulls this story out for all of us to see, because it's about risking. And let's read the first part of it. This is the man talking to his boss. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you're a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid. Circle that. And I went out and I hid your gold in the ground. So I was afraid. But here's something I wanted to ask. Are you protecting what you have, or are you trying to increase what's been given to you? Like at work or wherever you are. Are you just trying to protect what you have right now? This guy. Or could this next year, would it be the year that you could increase what's been given to you? In your family and relationships and health, money, your person, your brain, your heart, increase. And of course, the excuses start rolling in. It's their fault. I don't have what I want. Little boy's in Little League. He's out in left field. You know, three fly balls fly out there. He doesn't catch one of them. They all just drop. The fourth one comes and flies over his head, and he just starts marching right in the middle of the game, just starts marching right into the dugout. Gets into the dugout and goes over to the coach and just throws his gloves down. He says, nobody can catch a fly ball out in that darn field. And sometimes it feels just like that. It doesn't have anything to do with me. This all happened because of them, not me. And the excuses start to roll in. It's because the kind of boss you are. That's why. Because the husband you are, wife you are, kids I got. It's their fault I wasn't willing to take a risk. Now the story continues. Jesus keeps going. His master replied. So now you get to hear the wake-up call from the boss. The master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I've not sown and gather where I've not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I returned, I would have received it back with interest. And I don't know, maybe this worker's thinking, I've done this before, you're thinking when the boss comes, the boss is going to say something like, now listen, I understand. You've had a really stressful 2014. But he doesn't say that. See, this is a boss that doesn't want him to repeat the same mistakes again. What do you need to learn from 2014? And please know this. Jesus doesn't want you to repeat the same mistakes again. That's part of the change. And when we think of Jesus, sometimes we do think of Jesus as sort of, you know, flowing white robe with perfectly trimmed beard and hair, and he's just this very soft person that's always loving. But, you know, Jesus was pretty strong. I mean, when he was on the cross, he didn't break. And he did not beg. And he can be really strong because he doesn't want me to repeat the same mistake over and over and over again. So his boss gives him a wake-up call. And I know sometimes when I'm lazy, what's really happening in my life is I'm afraid I'm going to fail. So I just sit around and don't do anything because then I don't have to deal with it. It's almost like I'd almost rather be seen as lazy than a failure. You know, we all fear being a loser. You know, you make choices in life because you don't want anybody to see you as a loser. And then later on, you regret the decisions that you made because you didn't want anybody to see you as a loser. And so Jesus is telling this whole story to his guys, and he's saying, listen, you don't have to repeat the same mistake over and over again. Now, the last part of the story, the boss says, so take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags, for whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Last week I lost a sale at work. It was my own fault, and I just totally lost it. And the whole night, even at work when I got home, I was just gnashing my teeth. I was like, oh, man, it was my sale. I should have got that. other guy got that, and just like, you know, and gnashing your teeth is what he's saying is that deep regret. Now, in this story, he didn't fire him. It's nice to know Jesus doesn't fire anybody. He doesn't fire him. He still calls him his servant. But he definitely puts him on time out. He says, you know, maybe after you've gnashed your teeth for a while and you regret what has occurred, you'll invite me in next time. He doesn't fire him. It's not a picture of hell here. When I first was new following Jesus, I heard this story. I got, how unfair. That totally sucks. You're going to give the bag of gold to the guy that got the most gold? It's not how Robin Hood does things. I mean, I don't like that, you know. But then I thought about it. Can you imagine if you worked in this place and you saw what happened? And maybe you've done this at work before. They always get all the good customers. They get the good ups all the time. Oh, they got a spoon. Oh, they always get the best project. Her parents pay for her to get her nails done every week, whether she needs it or not. Mine are always better because I do them myself, sorta. Kinda. They gave them that car. They didn't earn it. Maybe you've done that before. Or maybe you've just seen somebody. It seems like, why do they always get the breaks? Everything always seems to go their way. I mean, I bet the employees were thinking about that. That guy gets all the breaks over there. Now he's getting another bag of gold. And the guy that's there, he doesn't know what's going on. He's just got an attitude that's positive. He's just taking a risk. And listen, when you take risks, good things just sort of come your way. It's like Jesus pulls the curtain back for all of us for just a moment. It says, if you ever wondered why that person over there, it just seems like stuff sort of comes to him. Well, here's the picture, because everybody was probably thinking that, and he wasn't even planning it, but all of a sudden, he has another bag of gold because he was willing to take a risk. What risk do you need to take this year? I've been thinking about my life, and I have a regret. In 2014, I was pretty quiet about my relationship with Jesus. I work with a bunch of guys, and they don't show up at work every day saying, hey, tell me about your walk with God. They don't. And so I've been pretty quiet. I haven't said too much. And I regret that. It was a big risk for me. There's an old story that has come through the ages in church, and Jesus is with an angel, and somehow they're able to see the whole earth, and the angel looks at it and he says, Lord, how are you going to get the message everywhere? And Jesus says, well, that's going to happen. He goes, everybody that's following me is going to spread the message. And the angel looks down at everybody and he says, Lord, what's the plan B? And the Lord said that there is no plan B. And I think this year I sort of lived like there was a plan B. Oh, God will take care of it somehow. I'm just going to try to be a good person. I wish I could say that I've said his name, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, but I probably haven't. I've been pretty quiet, and I've been pretty plan B this year. And I regret that. It's risky to follow Jesus. You know, the first words he said was, come follow me, and the last words he said is, go tell others. Been doing pretty good on the come follow me, not so good on the go tell others. Because that's where the risk begins. It's been intimidating for me. Been hearing all the different voices. Did you hear him, that religious fanatic? I grew up with guys like him. Don't eat lunch with them. You know, and I'm right where Saul was at. And I've been thinking about this next year, because I know the risk is worth it. I know it is. I know it's worth it. I know how that's how I met Jesus. I know that the plan A is how it occurs. I know that. There doesn't need to be a plan B. I know that. There's a pastor in New York City, and when he went there, it's a very difficult place. A lot of skeptics there. Not an easy place to talk to people about Jesus in New York City. And now this church has been there a long time. It's a Presbyterian church. He's an awesome pastor. And they have thousands now. But he sort of faced this whole thing. And I wanted you to just watch a short little clip that he's talking about, you know, like how the message goes person to person. He's talking about a little conference. His name is Tim Keller, but you'll get the idea check this out.
Well, Question Christianity is basically Question Christianity is best for somebody who has a certain amount of openness, probably, and has a good relationship with you. In other words, if you're going to invite a friend, hopefully it wouldn't be somebody you barely know, because the main value of an event like this is relational. That is, you hear some content, people ask some questions, and then you process it between you, yourselves. Actually, this was always the genius of Redeemer. I mean, in the early days of Redeemer, Redeemer had no buildings, still hardly does. it was very hard to find. We never did any advertising. We had no website because nobody had a website. And therefore, a lot of people said, well, you can't find Redeemer. How are you growing? And the answer is you only found Redeemer through a friend. And that was the secret. You never, ever just showed up at Redeemer. You only came if there was a friend you had already went. And then the friend and you processed what you heard. You didn't need to have a follow-up program. You didn't need to have someone come and visit you or give you a brochure or something like that. We didn't do any of that for years. And the reason was, by far the best way to help somebody find faith and process faith is in a relationship. And so we didn't have programs. We didn't have websites and videos and handouts and brochures. We had people. And if you came and you had doubts, you heard something that maybe I said or something that was said at the church, you process it with your friend. And that was far and away better than anything we've had since. So, I mean, I know people still, we want social media, we want a Facebook page, we want to do all this stuff, but it's all pretty impersonal. And actually, it means very little in the way, it's far less powerful than processing faith issues face-to-face with somebody you know.
Yeah, I know all kinds of people at work, and you do too, and this isn't a push to get you on my bandwagon. It's just, I just wanted to kind of open up and say, well, that's one of my regrets. That's where I'm heading this next year. I'm going to take a different risk. And I'm not going to, gather everybody into the lunchroom and say, turn or burn. Yeah, I'm not going that route. I'm not going to shove anything down their throat. I'm not going to have an A-board sign out in front of my work. Jesus loves you, then on the back says, or if not, go to hell. I'm not doing that. But I am in my relationship at times. I tried it recently with this one guy. He's a crazy guy at work, and he's going through some stuff. And so I'm driving a car. I work at a car place, and so I've got this car gassed up, and I'm driving this car, and I see him over smoking along the side there, and I'm getting ready to go by him. And just this little nudge says to me, stop and ask him how you can pray for him. And I'm like, that can't be you, God. That's pizza from last night, because that's so stupid. He's no way, And I get a little closer. Stop and ask him how you could pray for him. So I stop the car. It's hard to even hit the button when your hand is shaking like that. It's like, oh my gosh, And so I get the window down. He looks at me. He comes over. I says, hey man, what's up? Have you ever had a big thing to ask somebody and you just keep stalling? I was like, how are you? How's your cigarette? Did you get your hair cut? You're growing a beard. I like your shoes. Hi. And finally I said, hey man, if there was one thing I could pray for you about, what would it be? I wish you could see his face. I said, no, seriously, man. I said, if there was just one thing I could pray for you about. And all of a sudden he just stopped and got very still. He said, okay. He said, okay. And he just sort of opened up about this really heavy thing that he's going through. He says, I need some help. Would you pray about this? And so for the last couple months, every once in a while, not overbearing, don't put too much gravy on the potatoes, I'll just stop and ask him. I said, hey man, I'm still praying about that one thing. How's that going? And sometimes he's been willing to talk, and other times he acts like it never happened, and that's okay. But there's something occurring in our relationship. He knows I follow Jesus. That's all I'm shooting for. Because I know the Lord will take it from there. What are you willing to risk this next year? Because it's bigger than you. I hope it'll be something. I hope this next year you won't let fear make your final decision. And I really hope you'll set some boundaries. I heard this story about a guy that was down at the altar at church. Some churches have an altar, and they go down there and pray. And he's down there praying, and he says, "Oh, Lord." He goes, "Lord, I've been caught in the web of sin. Oh, Lord, please, Lord, take the web. Lord, get me out of the web of sin." And, you know, he's praying pretty loud. People can hear, "Lord, it's like a web. It's all around me. God, I'm caught in the web of sin." And finally, some guy gets sick of it, and he goes over and whispers in his ear, "Kill the spider." Sounds like a good church. What boundaries do you need to set? You need to set some boundaries because there's some risks you're going to take. But a boundary is not being reckless. Just spend some time praying and asking God. Then the last thing is keep moving regardless of the fear. Don't be the guy with the one bag. Don't be that guy. You don't have to be that guy. The one who gave you will help it increase. Now here's the bottom line. Your greatest risk is God's greatest opportunity. The biggest thing you want to see happen this year is God's greatest opportunity in your life this year. We're not talking about us. And look at this great promise. You can cut this out and put it on your fridge. Plow new ground for yourselves, plant righteousness, and reap the blessings that your devotion to me will produce. It's time for you to turn to me, your Lord, and I will come and pour out blessings upon you. That's your promise. Cut that out, man, and put it on your refrigerator or in your pocket and pull it out and go, "That's for me. As I devote to him this year, he pour out blessings on me."